Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 23rd of October. Very nice to have you with us. Just hearing the music of The Big Takeover playing at the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, on the 27th of this month, which I think if you check your schedule like I'm doing right now, you'll find out that's Saturday night. Scalloween with The Big Takeover and the Scofflaws, thelinda.org for more information. We'll be hearing their music this morning, and you can find out more on our website. See the entire playlist, wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. Let me introduce the panel to you, and we'll get started. We have a lot to talk about, and we'll get to that first. And I go from left to right only by the R's and L's on my shoes.
J.P. Miller from the Empire Report.
Good morning, sir. How
Good
are
morning.
You?
Thank you for having
How's
me.
How's everything?
Great.
We've missed you.
Great
it's
to
nice
see
to
you.
It's nice to have you. You weren't here last week because of the fun drive. It's good to have you here this week.
Thank
you
for
very
having
much. We also welcome from this is a long title, so I have to look this up. I don't know this one by heart. Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI. Jim Henler, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing good.
Very nice to have you with
Tetherball.
Us.
Tetherball.
Yeah, this would
tetherball.
Be tetherless.
Well, you never played
untethered,
tetherball?
Untethered.
Yeah, we played tetherball.
Tetherball's great. No, it's Mike who acted. He didn't ever hear of tetherball.
I don't know the game tetherball.
It's a volleyball that is on a string.
Oh.
And
I've seen that.
Yeah, that's tetherball.
Yeah, and you can smack the other kid with it, and then you don't have to go get the ball. Yeah. Like, it's just it's right there, it comes right back. It's not like it's one of those things where you have to go run down the hill to get the ball
back. I wonder if they played that game at the New York Military Academy where Donald Trump attended.
I don't think so.
It's a tough game, you know. It might not look tough, but it's tough when you play it. That's a tough game.
But they did play it at Cam Brock's house.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Cam Brock's house. their biggest advocate is with us. WAMC's Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. What about Mike Spain? You've missed him.
Oh, no. I said Mike Spain, executive. I'm sorry, Mike. I apologize. We were talking about tetherball, and I got
distracted.
Yeah.
I think
you said it. You know,
a little too many tetherballs to the head, apparently, on my part. Mike Spain, executive editor.
Associate editor.
Associate editor. I apologize.
Rex wouldn't like you to say executive editor because that would imply I was.
How do you care?
His executive,
yeah. All right. Mike Spain is here, the associate editor. Alan's here. Good morning. How are you?
We're all good, right? We do get an occasional letter saying, I hate it when you guys fool around at the beginning of the show. Stop fooling around.
Yeah, and if we don't, we get letters about that, too. So that's all right.
So a rabbi, a priest, and a minister. No,
sorry. Okay, but you'll tell us the rest of the break, right? Excellent. Good morning and welcome. Let's go to the topics. Sarah's already asked me to remind you about letters. Please keep them short. Please do not use abbreviations. And for God's sakes, pre-read them, because you leave out verbs and words, and we don't know what you're saying. It may look good on your end, but by the time it gets to us, we just don't understand what you're trying to say.
That email.
We're reading them on the fly, so please know that we're reading them. And we need to know what you're trying to say. Okay. With those admonishments, we welcome your letters, and we thank you very much for writing them. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to the stories for the day. We go with, I said this several times last week, and I guess this shouldn't be surprising to me. But this is a story that is that has been with us for a very long time in this news cycle, and with the Trump administration, stories seem to come and go very quickly. But the Khashoggi story really is with us and has been for the last 2 weeks and continues to dominate the news cycle. The Trump administration, confronted with further evidence of a cover-up in the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, veered on Monday between defending the value of its alliance with Saudi Arabia and pressing the Saudi government for answers. The White House sent the director of the CIA, Gina Haspel, to Istanbul to help the Turkish government with its investigation into the killing. But in Riyadh, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin held a wide-ranging meeting with Saudi Arabia's crown prince, who is suspected of playing a role in the killing of Mr. Khashoggi, a Saudi dissident. Mr. Mnuchin, who canceled his attendance at this week's Saudi investment conference in the wake of Mr. Khashoggi's killing at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, traded views with Prince Mohammed on economic ties and counterterrorism initiatives, as well as on the investigation into Mr. Khashoggi's death, according to a Treasury Department spokesman. There are also fresh doubts about the Saudi government's claim that Mr. Khashoggi was strangled accidentally after he got into a fistfight with 15 Saudi operatives, with a video of a body double surfacing on Monday. A Saudi operative donned Mr. Khashoggi's clothes after he was killed and left the building to create a misleading trail of evidence, according to the surveillance images leaked by Turkey. What a story. Well, it is quite a tale.
Well, first of all, it is. But secondly, we talk a lot about shiny objects here and diversions. This is a great diversion for this country. Because at the same time this is happening, we have a president of the United States who is trying to undo every nuclear treaty we have. And the world may be facing a tremendous, I mean, we have grandchildren, we have children, we have the future of the world. And here is a president of the United States who says, let's negotiate or reopen the negotiations. No, we are stepping out of the treaty that who signed? Yeah, well, it's true. He's got a point. That great left-winger, Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
Signed with Gorbachev. And so we're paying a lot of attention to this and it is, Joe, fascinating story about, you know, about how inept the Saudis have been with this thing. They sent a hit squad in. 14 guys come in. They bring with them a surgeon who is going to cut the guy apart with the right kind of bone saw. And then they say it was unfortunate. They tried. Unfortunate. Well, yeah, our fallback position is they got into a fistfight. What? The 14 guys got into a fistfight with the one adipose guy, and that's a different way of saying large guy who and they cut him up, and that was the fistfight. Well, you know, Americans like it simple. We like to understand what's going on. This is pretty simple. We understand it. But in the meantime, some very bad things are going on in this world.
I think it's another case of the Trump administration wanting to have its cake and eat it, too. They'll send the CIA director over to Turkey to help investigate this and get to the bottom of this, and they're disturbed by it, and they are suspicious by it. And yet they'll send their Treasury secretary, who just last week bowed out of the Desert Davos, you know, the big economic meeting that Riyadh or that the Saudis were hosting, which was, I think, a insult to the Saudis. So instead, he goes over and spends personal time, you know, with the king and then the crown prince, rather. And then he, you know, he basically makes it all right. So we want to have these close economic ties with Saudi Arabia. At the same time, we want to be able to say, well, we're disturbed by what happened to Mr. Khashoggi, and we want to get to the bottom of it. But in reality, it's just looking for some cover story that we can use to say this is unfortunate, but it doesn't interfere with our long relationship with Saudi Arabia. And it is a long relationship that preceded President Trump, Frank.
Yeah, Saudis have had an interesting relation with us. So, you know, I like looking back over the past administrations because, you know, when it came out during the Bush administration that the Saudis had actually been paying some of the guys who flew an airplane into one of our buildings, we were like, quiet, quiet, that's not a big deal. Let's attack Iraq. And again, it wasn't directly shown that it was the government supporting the attack, but they certainly supported the sleeper agents in the U.S. We have these incredible military sales. We have these five bases. But with Trump, we also add the fact that he's been financially reliant on the Saudis for a long time, although he tweeted, let me see if I got it. For the record, I have no financial interest in Saudi Arabia or Russia, for that matter. Any suggestion that I have is just more fake news, of which there is plenty. But let's see. What are some of the ones we know? We know that back in 1991, when Trump was about to go bankrupt, the Saudis bought a yacht from him for $20 million. 2016, they invested in an entire floor of his building. They helped buy the Plaza Hotel when he was in trouble for $325 million. So, I mean, literally hundreds of millions of dollars have gone from Trump to
And you know what happened?
To Trump.
Yeah, and Trump. You know, he was on during the campaign saying, I know the Saudis. I've done a lot of business with them. They have him on tape doing it. this guy just lies with such impunity, it doesn't matter.
I thought it was a big mistake for Secretary Mnuchin to appear with the Crown Prince yesterday, but also saw a very good article this morning in the New York Times by Jim Baker, which says, you know, we really need to balance our values and interests in the world and our response to this. And it's easy for all of us to say, well, you know, we need to really punish the Saudis. We have a deep, long-standing relationship with them, which is in our interest to have that relationship for a number of reasons. And so we do need to have a response that is appropriate, and likely most people are not going to be happy with that response.
JP, isn't there another interpretation a little bit below the surface here? Mnuchin pulled out on a meeting. Is that right, guys?
Right. He was going to the financial meeting of the desert, Davos in the desert kind of thing.
And as a protest, apparently, he pulls out. So now we see Mnuchin showing up again. Is it possible that somebody had to wrap him on the knuckles and say, you get over there?
I think it was a huge mistake for him to go over there. That was one of the things that Jim Baker pointed out in his column. Not having senior level meetings with the head of the country is one of those punishments that you can have. He compared it to Tiananmen Square back in the 90s, 80s, with Bush 41's response to that. You cut off top level meetings and photographs with the guy, and also you cut off arms sales. And will that stop the Saudis from doing that action in the future? Potentially. You also see, boy, the Saudis' response with this, you can tell they have no experience in dealing
with
a free
people
press.
People opposing us?
Challenging
our word?
It's
You're
like
absolutely right.
Public relations 101 is you get the story out no matter how bad it is and you start cleaning up after it. But having a news story every day.
Well, you know, JP, you're right about the photograph, but apparently the Americans didn't let that photograph out. It came from the Saudi side.
Yes.
And the American press picked it up. But they were going to be adamant about not showing him sitting there.
Dumb move. He shouldn't have met with them at all.
Well, but there's a reason. There's always a reason. The reason is that somebody in the White House said, oh, now you got the Saudis mad at us.
Well, you want to preserve the relationship, but I don't think it's with photographs with the top guy who clearly just murdered this columnist.
We don't do this relationship as a negotiation. In the past, so again, Bush, Obama, they actually managed that relationship, but with Trump, it's been much more of a cowing to them. They've, you know, given him the ego. They've given him the money.
Well, we've been kowtowing to them for years.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't hit it
true.
On
that's
Trump.
No.
It's pre-Trump.
He has pushed it. No, it's absolutely pre-Trump. Don't get
it's
me wrong.
It's both parties, too. Yeah.
But it's been pushed further.
And that may be why we have
a personal relationship, not a nation-state relationship.
And that may be why we have an emoluments clause in the Constitution.
Well,
if you think about it for a minute, the idea is, you know, it's one thing to operate on a state level. It's another that you have this conflict going on between your personal needs, right?
Do you think the events are causing some in Washington to consider changing this decades-old relationship with the Saudis? First of all, we don't rely on their oil nearly as much as we did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even if they started withholding oil and raised the price, that would just spur the development of more alternatives and, you know, non-oil sources of energy and electric cars, things like that. And then and that actually would be a good thing. And then the other possibility would be that, you know, this question where Trump last week alternately said 500,000 and then said 600,000 jobs are at stake because of the arms deals that the Saudis have with us. Well, you know, everybody else, you know, economists and others say that that's way more jobs than would be produced by these arms deals if they do go through. Should we reconsider our relationship with the Saudis? What's the advantage of having them as our ally? Is that our stake in the Middle East?
Well, I agree with you, but let's also look at the hatred that this president has. They're Iranians, and the one ace in the hole that they have, or this besides the Israelis, obviously, is the arrangement with the Saudis that they have going for them, and I think that's part of it, Mike.
Well, it's unusual. I mean, well, if you think about it, Saudi Arabia acting like a Western democracy is probably a few centuries away, wouldn't you say?
Well, they're allowing women to drive cars now. I mean, I say that with my tongue in my cheek.
Yeah. But they do let some of them
right,
drive.
Right.
But you know, again, it's much too complex to just try
not
to
that,
make a paragraph out of it. But Iran is a very Western-leaning country. They are very much embracing Western, I mean, they're trying to, there's elements in Iran trying to embrace Western democracy, a lot of it. And it had elements of a Western democracy in the past, of being a Westernized nation in the past. Probably if we hadn't, you know, put our thumbs into their eye and pushed them into the ground, you know, there might have been a better chance to have a cooling off that would take a long time. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk the Dow is about to open. We're set to tumble on earnings fears, so we'll talk about that as well and all the other stuff. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, Jim Hendler, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. You know where we get letters like these.
Okay, here we go from Penelope, who says, the fooling around at the...
Just pull that down a little bit, Alan.
The fooling around at the beginning is royally obnoxious, and that's from Penelope. And then Margaret checks in and says, many of us love it when you, quote, fool around at the round table. Make us feel we're right there with you sitting at the table. Your banter is quite refreshing. Thanks for letting us experience all of your great personalities. From not at all annoyed, Margaret in Reedsboro, Vermont.
All right, so now here's the assignment. So, Margaret, you write Martin. Oh, no. Margaret, you write Penelope and work it out.
Yeah.
Just you two figure it out.
You two. Okay.
It's on you.
Okay, and then comes a few less important letters like this one. Kevin says, the migrant caravan. See, don't you see that was a little bit of somebody's going to write and say you. Anyway, hi panel, I don't want to sound conspiracy minded, but couldn't the Republicans be behind the migrant caravan coming from Central America?
We'll get all into that story. We have many, many articles about that story. We will talk about it in depth.
It seems to add up to the best midterm issue would conveniently pop up now.
There are many theories.
Kevin and Sandy, yeah. And by the way, Joe, we did talk about that, right, yesterday.
We talked about it yesterday with Sarah Rogerson, yeah.
Yeah. And Jamie says, the Saudi family. I think it's time to recognize that the Saudi family, who the English gave Arabia to, is nothing more than desert hillbillies without the fine education.
Well,
without the fine education. We have to stop catering to an administration that runs on emotion and lies. No, I am not talking about the USA. And that is from Jamie.
All right. Thank you, Jamie. We welcome your letters to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, or we like your letters as well is probably what I should say. That's the more proper grammatic. Anyway, let us go to the immigration issue. And this is... I mean, there's a lot here, and the president and the GOP candidates are escalating race and fear as election ploys. This is from the New York Times. President Trump on Monday sharply intensified a Republican campaign to reframe the midterm elections as a battle over immigration and race, issuing a dark and factually baseless warning that unknown Middle Easterners were marching toward the American border with Mexico. The unsubstantiated charge marked an escalation in Mr. Trump's efforts to stoke fears about foreigners and crime ahead of the November 6th vote, as he did to great effect in the presidential race. Mr. Trump and other Republicans are insistently seeking to tie Democrats to unfettered immigration and violent crime, and in some instances this summer and fall, they have attacked minority candidates in nakedly racial terms. We've certainly seen that locally. So, Mr. Trump is now railing daily in speeches and on Twitter against the migrant caravan. That term is at, as we talked about yesterday, is a fraught term. Moving north through Central America, and on Monday called it a national emergency. The caravan has dominated conservative talk radio as well as Fox News. President Trump on the campaign trail yesterday linked it very close, saying the Democrats want these caravans, and because they, and then he had this whole laundry list of everything from against the country to lousy laws, lousy legislation, and everything else. So that has provoked a great deal of concern. And I just want this one line in this article from the New York Times. In upstate New York, Republican political groups have aired ads branding a Democratic congressional candidate, Antonio Delgado, who is black, as a big city rapper, and accusing him of seeking to give government handouts to food stamp recipients. And, of course, that we are the debate between all four of the candidates in that race, but both Antonio Delgado and John Faso were a part of that debate. And that issue, of course, was brought up once again. Interestingly, Alan, the Green Party candidate was called on Faso to cease the ads and to denounce them. Yes.
Well, yeah. And not only that, I think Chris Gibson, who was, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're correct.
His predecessor.
The predecessor said basically cut it out.
Okay, but the overall issue here is about the about immigration and what is happening to the South and the escalation of fear and race that the GOP candidates are using here, and whether it will work or not.
It's very effective. Don't you agree?
Yeah, but, you know, it is effective. And I think those people who, you know, don't like Trump, and I'm certainly one of them, have to think this stuff through as to whether he knows what he's doing. So despite the fact that we feel it's so reprehensible to doing this kind of thing, he knows how it is to gin up the base. And that's what this is. So for those people who are saying it's morally wrong, they're right. No question about it. But for those people who say he's a dummy and he doesn't know what he's talking about, he doesn't know what he's doing, they're wrong about that. Yeah. He does know what he's doing.
And it would be really hard for him to be able to manufacture this issue. You go on the Today Show this morning, and the first story is not Khashoggi. The first story on the Today Show this morning is 7,000 migrants coming up from Central America. Trump won the 2016 election, I think, very much so on the issue of immigration. He got blue-collar Democrats to vote with him on immigration. And I also think, you know, you see the recent Wall Street Journal, NBC News poll, Trump is at 47% approval rating, an all-time high, 10 points higher than the day he was elected. And now with these, you know, with this caravan coming up, this is a perfect issue for him to exploit. I still think they're going to lose a ton of seats in the midterms. It's going to be a very tough year for Republicans. But I think he's just trying to stop the bleeding at this point.
Well, as I said, it is very effective. This is the same narrative as 2016. And I know, Alan, you don't really like the Pew Research Center.
Pew!
But the Pew Research Center looked at the voters in blocks and compared them to where it was in 2016, and it's right back where it was.
Absolutely.
It's just about where it was in 2016 with white men supporting Trump at the same percentage, suburban women supporting him at the same percentage, et cetera, et cetera. And whether that will translate over into the congressional races, we don't know. I mean, it hasn't for previous presidents. Certainly Obama was not successful in going out and rallying up the base and getting them out to vote during the off years when he was president. So this is a new era. Perhaps he's going to be able to do it. And the immigrants, you know, you're right. It's the big story. They're showing these people walking through Mexico, and they're not Middle Eastern people carrying weapons as he would portray it to be. Reporters who are walking with them are saying they are families who are desperate, desperate because they're leaving these war-torn countries, these wars where there's civil wars and poverty
and they just
crime.
Had a brutal election.
And right.
And it went horribly. And that has caused this influx of people. And instead, that's being painted by the president as
an invasion.
An invasion, but also that it is being paid for by the Democrats to bring these people in and to have them march before the midterms.
It's going to be tough for Trump because, after all, he doesn't control the House, he doesn't control the Senate, he doesn't control the court. So, how for the past couple of years the Democrats have been pushing him around so bad. Wait, I got that wrong. Wait a minute. No, seriously, I still don't understand this argument that we've owned things for 2 years, we could have put in whatever immigration we wanted, and we've done nothing because our own party can't figure it out, so we're going to run on fear of immigrants. And by the way, if we're reelected, we're still going to do nothing about it. I mean, it
unites
the rational self.
One of these articles, I think it was in the New York Times story, they quoted a woman from, I think, Minnesota, who was frightened, terrified, that immigrants were going to come to the summer homes around the lake that are empty during the winter, and they were going to take over those homes because people go south during the winter and they abandon the homes.
It's the white woman.
It's terrifying.
It's the white blonde woman, a routine that we have heard so much of over the years. They're going to come and they're going to get us and they're going to rape us and the rest of it. Nevertheless, Mike, I wanted to go back to something you said before about whether or not this election was going to be different or not. All the reports now are that massive numbers of people are going to the town halls in Massachusetts, where I live,
for early voting.
And it's the reason it's important is it's an indication of where the passion is. I don't think the passion was there for Hillary, be honest with you. But I think the passion is here in this Trump thing now. I think people are really scared of the guy and will do almost anything to get rid of him, which is why Americans have to start thinking in a different way. We have never said we're going to vote for the party. We have always said we're voting for the man or the woman. Now, this time, it's the flipping of the House. And I think the big mistake on the part of the Democrats is that they're not saying flipping, 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 and flipping in order to make that point.
Right. And you do look at Obama. So Obama, at the same time in his presidency, also had an identical approval rating to Trump right now, 47%. He lost 63 seats in 2010.
That's an interesting statistic.
Bill Clinton, at the same time in his presidency, had a 48% approval rating, same as Trump. He lost 54 seats back in 1994. So Trump is going to lose, I think, dozens of seats. I think, though, for him, he's just trying to, again, stop the bleeding. He wants to avoid losing 75 seats. I think he'd be happy losing.
And so, by predicting that they're going to lose seats, he's basically
lowering expectations.
Right. He is, Mike. Yeah. He's basically saying, I acknowledge what's going to happen here.
Well, he's made it so that he keeps saying it's not a referendum on Trump. Of course, a few weeks ago he was saying it was a referendum on Trump, but let's not go there. But
you mean
again,
he's flip-flopped?
It's kind of this difficulty where, I was talking to someone who's a Trump supporter and asked if the lying bothered them, and they said he doesn't lie. And I said, but he said this, and then he said the opposite. And they're like, no, he didn't say that. I mean, so it's like you can show the tweets. You can say the words, and it's just not getting
the lie thing. I think is tough on Trump because people assume that all politicians lie, right?
No,
we've
true.
Seen governors of New York for many years and mayors of New York City for many years lie all the time, and it's
the word lie. I think it's a mistake to constantly use the word lie. I mean, he's basically just say what he said on this day, say what he said on that day, and not. It becomes an attack when you say the word lie. He without attribution said this. Without any documentation, he said that. Those are perfectly fine. But by calling it a lie, it just becomes extremely partisan and it plays into a narrative that turns people off. I think it backfires on the Democrats who say that. And the media people, they come across, whether they're trying to be balanced or not, the coming across is not being balanced, which hurts the media's message. The media should be trying to demonstrate its objectivity in reporting the news.
Well, I think it's objective to say the guy's a liar. In fact, I think it's objective to say the guy's a lying liar.
Pants on fire liar, you mean?
Pants on fire?
All right. And on that note, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Jim Hendler, and J.P. Miller on our group this morning. We welcome your letters. Alan has a few, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, this is from Elias, who says, the nation's premier polling analysts at 538 have the Dems at an 84% probability to take the House of Representatives.
We've heard that before.
Yes, we have.
Jim, what do you say about that?
Yeah, I was just muttering during the break that that's almost exactly the same number that Hillary had at this point, this distance from the election.
Absolutely, so that's right.
It's really hard to predict. The poll, you know, I study polls, I study these numbers. The prediction stuff at the moment is so off because we just have no clue who are the people who are turning out.
I keep going back to Ocasio-Cortez, and, you know, she was going to lose to Crowley, and she won, and there was a 50% change, 50% from what the pollsters said was going to happen. Amazing. So as Mike just said quite brilliantly, as always, it's all about turnout. And anyway, Ilya said, they're saying that Dems will win the must win the election by 6% in order to win a majority of the seats. Yeah. This is due to Karl Rove engineered gerrymandering the Republicans have installed throughout the red state America. That's true, by the way.
That's absolutely.
They had a philosophy of grabbing the legislatures and then
state
going
right
governments,
in.
And
right.
Texas was the worst example of all. They just threw everybody out, and they didn't wait till the regular time. They just did it as soon as they got installed.
Well, it's a statewide election going on in Texas, and that supersedes any gerrymandering that the that's a close race.
No. Yeah. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when they gerrymandered in the first place, and they kicked all the congressional guys out.
Right. Yeah. You're right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Steve says, refugees, International Church of the Four Square Gospel is a mega church with a huge congregation in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, the city where the bulk of the current spontaneous convoy of Hondurans started. It has strong ties to VP Pence's Pentecostal Christian supporters. Given the timing of this threat, you kind of have to wonder.
Yeah, I think that's time will tell, and we'll know more why this mass of people are coming together. But I think in the end, they're not even aware, according to the reporters who are questioning them as they're walking along. They're not even aware there's a midterm election going on. They're just so desperate to get away from where they are. And they see the United States and they see their relatives and the people they know who've come here before. And you know, it may be ill-advised because they're not going to get through the border once if they ever make it up to the U.S. border. But these are desperate people, and it's tragic. It is tragic. And it could be a human, you know, a humanitarian crisis if they're stranded in Mexico.
You know, the other thing is we have to start comparing some of these numbers. You know, this sounds like such a big number because we're not used to seeing these kind of things. But the number of Syrians pouring into Jordan were in the hundreds of thousands.
That's right, Jim. I mean, and our immigration numbers are actually down substantially from where they were 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Even if we let all these people in, there would be less people than came in last year.
And yet, when you take a look on the news at this mass of people approaching the borders, you're both exactly right in terms of what we know about all of this, but it's the impression that this guy is playing with, and he's good at it.
Well, and we also have never seen pictures like of the group breaking through and crossing the fence crossing the bridge into Mexico, which, you know, people criticize, say, Trump, you know, a wall would not work. Why would we put in a wall? It won't work. Well, people see this on television. They immediately think, gee, if they had a little bigger wall, the people wouldn't be able to get through.
Okay. And Brucey writes, please, national media, stop running endless stories about the, quote, caravan. These are refugees, mothers, fathers, children, toddlers, slowly walking north. Best guess is they are 2 months south of our border. Nonstop daily repetition of Trump's fear-mongering by major media is a free election ad for the GOP. And that's from Brucey. spruce
up. Well, it's a good point. And remember, last year there was a quote-unquote caravan coming, and it just sort of fizzled out. People probably went home. People probably stayed in Mexico, and maybe a few people made it to the border, and maybe even a few got into the United States. I don't know. But it is exactly as your writer says there, Alan. I agree with him.
But you know what? The reports, these are pregnant women in some cases.
They want to have their babies in the U.S.
It's unbelievable, and yet they're making 25 miles a day. That's pretty extraordinary. How do you do that?
I mean, and sleeping in a foreign place outside with no shelter.
With three children.
Think about that.
Well, that's how desperate they are to give a better life to their families, and they are extremely desperate. And the weird thing is, Trump is now saying he's going to cut U.S. aid to El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, which he can't do. The Congress has to do that, but he says it in his tweets. And you know, one of the reasons these countries are in the sad shape they're in is because of U.S. foreign policy for decades that supported dictatorships that caused civil wars that tore these countries apart and made it a bed for gangs to form and crime to happen. And people are trying to escape that. And what we're going to do is we're going to make it tougher on these countries by taking what U.S. aid we give them now away. Beguiles the mind.
And Juan says, caravan, good morning. Guatemala and Mexico are signatories to the 1951 Refugee Convention and the 1967 Protocol. Don't these countries have an obligation to take responsibility for refugees who come from a country that actually share a border or, at the very least, share cultural heritage and similarities? Thank you. And that's from Juan. And Jalen says, please, can we stop saying Hillary lost the election? When one candidate gets...
Good point.
Okay, but she did.
When one candidate...
She got more votes.
Not president now.
When one candidate gets nearly 3 million more votes than the other, and the other is given the election by the sorely outmoded Electoral College, is that a loss or a gift to her opponent? Hey, did you either ever play chess or checkers or Monopoly? You know, there are rules. And unfortunately, them's the rules. And you couldn't be righter, Jalen, about, you know, how outmoded this thing is.
And besides, there was a lot of voter fraud.
That's funny. And
three million of them who voted the wrong way, according to Trump. That's right.
And Garrett from my favorite town of Copaig, the GOP Trump seems to think thousands of people are going to keep the secret of being paid by George Soros to walk to the border, much as thousands of people have kept the secret about the faked moon landing. And that's from Garrett. And let me just
Good point, Garrett.
Yeah, let me just say George Soros had a bomb in his
mailbox down in Westchester County. Yeah.
And Richard says, FASO not interested in protecting Social Security for your younger generation of workers. Panel, during yesterday's debate between the congressional candidates for New York's 19th district, I noticed that when the topic of Social Security and Medicare came up, John Faso repeated at least twice verbatim that he wants to protect these programs, quote, for our seniors. He did not say he wants to protect Social Security for future generations.
Future seniors.
I get the feeling that he wants to eliminate these crucial benefits for younger workers. They'll be on their own. That's from Richard. And John says, it's my birthday. I love WMC Roundtable. Ty, as always, as my unofficial birthday, can you please add, please, no abbreviations, because it says TY, as always. Okay. As my unofficial birthday present, can you please add the fact to today's broadcast that the massive amount of arms sales to Central America is the major impetus for the widespread carnage the immigrants flooding through Mexico are trying to escape. We sell huge amounts of small arms to these countries that end up chasing common folk to our border. Keep your faith in America. Vote and support public radio. Long live Dr. C. Well, now I'm a little less annoyed for
that. That's an abbreviation. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Johnny Marfan in Cummington, where everyone, here you go.
I missed the other part, but that's all right.
So, what part?
Nothing. Go ahead, Mike.
We could talk for a long time about the history of the United States and these Latin American countries and how we've supported them and their military dictators and all that. But I don't think we're selling arms to them. We're providing arms to them and providing money for those arms. You know, it gets very complicated. I guess all it is, it's a sad situation that people are naturally fleeing from, and now they're becoming a political, playing into politics in the U.S. It's just kind of too bad.
Big hand on the 12, little hand on the 10. Time for news with Ray Graff.
Can you tell me what we're fighting about?
The Big Takeover, the music we're listening to this morning. And there have been Scalloween with the Big Takeover and the Scofflaws at the Linda on the 27th. And you can find out more by going to thelinda.org and see the playlist at wamc.org/roundtable. Our panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Jim Hendler, and J.P. Miller. We do have letters, and then we're going to move on to other topics.
All right, Joe. Thank you. Chris from Albany says, I'm staunchly pro-goofing around at the start of the show. And on another subject, I understand the nuance between lies and falsehoods told mistakenly or out of ignorance, but Trump, by any practical, reasonable standard, lies. Chronically. If the media can't tell us in clear language when someone is lying, or if they're likely to lie, it unavoidably dilutes and frustrates its mission to inform us. And that's from Chris in Albany. And Catherine says, election. Dear panel, you may not have already discussed this, but early this morning I saw in the news that Republicans were ahead in early voting. Not sure what to make of this, except a rising fight or flight response. Okay. And then Carolyn says, couple things. Saying without any proof when repeating something Trump said doesn't accomplish a thing. They, in quotes, just don't hear those words. Lie is heard and just inflames his supporters more. About the caravan, a supporter on CBS News, the nightly news yesterday mentioned that organizers did or said something which didn't register for me. All I heard was organizers. Russia is going all out to interfere in everything to do with our government, culture, etc. Are they organizers? And that's from Caroline. And then we heard from a different Carolyn. I commend as prerequisites reading for all on your panel, Frank Bruni's 1020 New York Times column, Read Trump and Going Sideways. Get over being outraged. You're playing into Trump's MO and the partisanship. Focus on the facts, including failures in policy. Today's mention of GOP's 2 years in power without an immigration policy is a great example.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
All right. So let's move on to some other topics and find out what else is making news. We do want to talk about Brexit. At least I want to talk a little bit about Brexit. Theresa May is defiant on Brexit as critics accuse her of losing control. Amid growing anger over her leadership, Prime Minister Theresa May struck a defiant tone Monday, insisting that Brexit negotiations are 95% done and that the final product will amount to a good deal for Britain. May has faced harsh criticism from Brexit hardliners who say she is ceding control to the European Union, from political rivals who say she has lost command over her party, and from those who want to remain in the EU and say she is denying the people of Britain control over their future. May told Parliament, the shape of the deal across the vast majority of the withdrawal agreement is now clear. She told this, adding that her government has been making progress in talks with negotiators across the English Channel. But that last 5% is no small thing. Indeed, how to avoid a hard border between Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom, and Ireland, an EU member, is a real sticking point, according to Theresa May. It has been this way for months. Rob Ford, a politics professor at the University of Manchester, said it's basically Groundhog Day every single day. The Irish border, how do we solve it? Who knows? Everyone has a big row. Wake up the next day, like Bill Murray, you hear the same song.
So one of the interesting things about Britain, so I have actually spent a lot of time in England. I have a lot of friends who are British, and I have friends who voted both ways. But what's interesting is most of the Remain people had more or less the same article, and most of the Leave split into about 5 or 6 different issues, you could see. And I think that's really what's causing a lot of the problem over there is that, there was a it was very much like, here, you know, let's get something to change. But they didn't have an argument about what that change looks like, and it leads to a kind of stasis. And I think she's in a tough position. I'm not a big fan, but, you know, it's really tough. The other thing is it's very generational. So, you know, the younger people were almost all for Remain in large parts.
Do you know, did the younger people turn out to vote?
No.
The ones who were protesting like over the last weekend.
So their turnout was higher than ours, but not nearly as high as would have, and it was enough that it could have changed things, which is part of why a lot of people want to, you know, we at least have these midterms and we have these revotes in some sense.
Well, in Northern Ireland, it was very much anti-Brexit.
They like it the way it is up there.
And, you know, Joe, you were just over across the pond.
Yeah.
Did you talk to anybody about the possibility?
That anybody wanted to talk about. And I felt there was we talked a little bit about this on the air, but there was a real fear. And it clouded in some ways the entire trip, because that is all there is, a lot of anger. And you felt that almost everywhere you went. And I went from the southernmost tip of to the northernmost tip, and that's universal.
That's pretty interesting. I was over in May, and except for two cab drivers who I asked about it, nobody had anything to say about it. So it's really become a much more front burner issue as the time comes when they have to make a decision. One of the plans would be to have an open border between Ireland and the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, which May doesn't want. The European Union wants that. The other suggestion that some in the UK are making.
How would that work, Mike? I'm sorry.
Well, that's exactly the question. It would continue to be the way it is. You just drive. They say when you're in Ulster, which parts of which are in the Republic and parts of which are in Northern Ireland, you don't know where you are until you go to pay for something and they want pounds instead of euros. And it's that. You know, the border really doesn't exist.
Well, then, but why would the Europeans want this open border? That confuses me, because it seems to me one of the things that is being held over May's head is the inability to solve this crisis.
Well, what they want is they want that situation between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland to continue. The Brits don't want it. May doesn't want it, because then you'd have to have a border between regular, you know, UK and Northern Ireland.
And counties to the north.
Right, and it would, they don't want that.
But either side doesn't want that wall. Neither side wants that border.
They don't want the tension, right?
They don't want the tension. And as you say, they want to go from north to south without any issues.
Some have suggested that as far as borders go, that the UK stay within the European Union border definition, and that not be part of Brexit, that they continue to have open borders. But that was sort of the reason they voted for it, wasn't it?
Part of it, yeah.
Well, also, isn't this a sterling example of where all of the people who were concerned about Brexit said, but what about this? But what about this? But what about this? But what about this? And people were saying, oh, you know, we'll figure that out when we get down the road. And now we have to figure out down the road. And they're like, okay, but what about this?
Yeah. You know, I hope we could get Richie Neal, who is the Irish expert we have had on our air, as you know, a congressman from my district, who was instrumental in the in solving the great crisis.
That'd be a great interview.
Nobody knows more about things Irish than Richie Neal. I'd love to have him on about that.
The other story I want to get to, and we're up to date on letters.
Yeah,
the other story that I want to get to is a couple of them, actually. One is
Oh, come on.
There is the story about John Kelly and Corey Lewandowski duking it out outside the Oval Office. This apparently happened last February. But it also comes a week after Kelly apparently got into a fight with Pompeo, maybe?
It wasn't Pompeo. It was, who the heck was it? But it was another you know, one of those guys.
So he's somewhat pugnacious.
So anyway, an informal advisor to President Trump was Corey Lewandowski. Now, he had left, of course. He left during the campaign, went to go work with CNN, but then was a presence still within the White House. That argument turned into a physical altercation that required Secret Service intervention just outside the Oval Office. That, according to people familiar with the events. The episode, details of which have not previously been reported, is the latest illustration of the often chaotic atmosphere that Mr. Trump is willing to tolerate in the White House, as well as a reflection of the degree to which Mr. Kelly's temper can be provoked. The near brawl, during which Mr. Kelly grabbed Lewandowski by the collar and tried to have him ejected from the West Wing, came at a time when the chief of staff was facing uncertainty about how long Mr. Trump would keep him in his job. A guessing game over his departure has colored his tenure ever since. And
I know what you're thinking, Jim. When
he's pretty high up in the pool right now.
He was his job was at stake. He almost was fired, and then he grabs Lewandowski and levels him. And Trump says, "I like that guy. Yeah, I'm keeping him."
Just what I was thinking, Mike.
I didn't say that. I'm in fact neither confirm nor deny anything about Kelly. Given
you have to think about Kelly's career. For 40 years, has been in the military, where there are strict lines of authority. Decision making is very streamlined, sure. And when people make decisions, they're kept. And certainly in this White House, those lines of authority are blurred, if there are any lines of authority. Mm-hmm. And when decisions are made by the president or by the chief of staff, that those decisions are often overturned and re-overturned the other way and re-overturned the other way, and is what many describe as a chaotic White House.
Or so call the last guy in the room.
Right. So you can see why Kelly is
reality TV.
Is frustrated.
By the way, it was Bolton. He had a big fight with us last week, I think it was Bolton.
And I realize it's probably not appropriate to say this, but, you know, who amongst us wouldn't want to give Corey Lewandowski a slap?
Wasn't it Corey Lewandowski? He left the Trump campaign shortly after he was accused of assaulting a reporter in Florida during a campaign rally, kind of dragging her by the arm and pulling her out. So, you know, these people are highly emotional, I guess. Charged up. Who knows?
Makes good TV. I mean, you know, I hate to say it,
TV,
but it's reality.
Jim,
so my wife and daughter are big reality TV fans. I'm less so, but it's like, you know, they really believe what they're watching and that there's no scripting and they're not like editing for the best stuff and things like that.
Are you planning to go home today?
I'm still being in. My daughter doesn't live in town.
Mr. Kelly told aides that Mr. Trump has asked him to stay on in his role until 2020, but reports of his conflicts with other staff members have continually raised questions about how long he will last. Even Mr. Trump has privately indicated to people that he was skeptical that Mr. Kelly would remain that long.
Yeah, Leon Panetta had some interesting things to say about Kelly. And, you know, he said that he's a good Marine. He would walk off a cliff for people who earned his loyalty. But there's no question that the level of frustration must be rising if he's getting into shouting matches and starting to really take on other people. And that's really the description. And who's got the latest book out right now? Scaramucci?
Oh, and by the way, long as we have a few seconds, I am disgusted because every time I turn on any CNN, MSNBC, you see this jerk on the TV.
Jerk? I'm sorry.
Scaramucci.
Oh, Scaramucci. Oh, okay. Scaramucci.
Mooch. He's awful.
Mooch has got a book out.
Yeah, he does. It's awful.
What was it called? My 7 days or something?
Right. Yeah,
my 11 days in the White House.
I'd like to get him up against
the
wall.
I didn't make 2 weeks, right?
Well,
11 days in July.
Week in the life.
And there you go. It does. And then Lewandowski has a book out too, I believe, coming out about. I think I read that. Wasn't that in that article about the deep state?
That's right, the deep state.
And I think that is also something that is coming to a bookstore near you.
You left. You think I couldn't take Scaramucci if I, you know?
No, I thought it was.
You think I couldn't?
I thought it was funny that we were talking about violence in an office,
right.
And then we were going to have violence in the office.
Right. That was my point exactly.
Exactly.
I think it's interesting that all these. You're supposed to. If you're a staffer of a White House, you're supposed to wait a certain amount of time before writing a tell-all. And there have been a number of tell-alls, and I think the only negative one is Omarosa. So positive one, I would say Spicer's was relatively positive. Scaramucci's relatively positive. And I don't know about Lewandowski's.
It is called, I mean, just by the title, you can say that it's probably positive. It's Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency, scheduled to be published in the week after the midterm. So there we go on that.
Do these books sell?
No.
I mean, why would anybody buy them?
the Omarosa book sold.
Well, and Woodward, who obviously isn't a White House staffer.
I mean, you know, that's a name, obviously.
Well, and Omarosa was fairly early, right, Joe? So that people were desperate for that kind of news.
Well, I think the anti-books tend to sell better.
Yes, way better. That's true.
Yeah, well, that's, yes. And in fact, they're saying most people who are going, Spicer said this, that when you go to the publisher and say, you know, well, what kind of dirt do you have? And they're like, oh, I don't really have any dirt. All right.
Well, Michael Wolff's book, you know, Fire and Fury, that was the first one.
And that did fairly well.
It did pretty well. I think because he got it out quick.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, I do think there's a differentiation between those written by people who are within
insiders,
who had a job within the administration versus reporters who are covering the day-to-day goings on.
Some of these people will undoubtedly be leaving the Trump administration after the midterm elections. I mean, that just happens. It's not like I know something, but I mean, that's an ordinary thing, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah, I know.
So maybe that'll reveal some more inside doo-doo.
And I want you to know that Aragon is finally out, and he is reporting, according to CNN, it was pre-planned for ferocious murder. I guess we all knew that already.
Yeah, I guess Erdogan, the head of Turkey, is using the Khashoggi killing to really put the pressure on the Saudis.
We are out of time.
No.
My thanks to everybody and to the...
Gee, Joe.
I'm sorry.
Gee whiz.
Want to end the party early, but, you know, we're done. We have to move on. That's all right. You all have jobs to
go
to,
don't
you? Yeah, that's right. We'll do the banter again. J.P. Miller, thank you very much. Good to have you here. Good to have you back. Jim Henwer, always a pleasure. Thank you. Mike Spain, see you next week. And Alan, thank you as always.
Thanks, buddy.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.